Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's Dot Foil Computer Services, and we're on the web at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking to Summer Pierre about her very charming book called The Artist in the Office. Right now, I would like to welcome Eric Witt. He is Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Bill Richardson, and Trish Lopez, who is with the Film Office of New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
So we're here to talk about, I always call it New Mexico's burgeoning film industry, and I've been reprimanded on more than one occasion by Eric Witt, because the film industry is no longer burgeoning, but what would you call it, mature?
I would say it's burgeoned. It is mature.
It is not declined, which could be a post-burgeoning state.
It could be post-burgeoning, but we're not quite there yet.
So, seriously, the New Mexico film industry has been one of Governor Richardson's real priorities to bring this kind of industry into the state and to cultivate homegrown filmmaking, film crew activity, film editing, post-production, and so on in the state of New Mexico. Give us sort of a rundown of that process and where we are now, Eric.
Well, in 60 seconds, we've gone from, you know, virtually no production to speak of in 2002, the year before the governor took office, to having over 130 feature motion pictures and TV series made here since 2003. We've grown our crew base from less than 100 to approximately 3,000 people directly employed in the state. About 10,000 people employed when you add in support services like the hotels, car rental, building supply, et cetera, that are in there. Thousands of businesses that have benefited from this industry in the state. And about, you know, we calculate about $3 billion, a little over $3 billion in economic activity generated over the last 5 years.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. I would say that we have been probably the premier success story of states that have tried to put these programs in place, you know, in the last 5 years. Our chief competitor probably being Louisiana. We're always mentioned, you know, kind of going neck and neck. A couple other states cranking it up. But, New Mexico is seen around the world now as a model for how to implement these programs, how to grow them successfully, how to grow them smartly, and it's paid off for the state.
It's interesting when you look at New Mexico and Louisiana, these are both states with thriving cultures that are not, what would you call it, monoculture mainstream America.
That's true. A lot of what attracts filmmakers to New Mexico is that cultural mix and the uniqueness of the place that's here, both the geographic uniqueness and variety of the state, but also the cultural uniqueness, and of course the unparalleled place of the arts in New Mexico culture statewide. I don't think there is another state in the country where the arts in all their forms are integrated so closely with everyday life.
So what are some of the ways, I mean, you said that New Mexico has grown its film industry in a careful and smart way. What are some of the different programs that actually have been put forward to grow the film industry?
Well, first you have to start from the premise that our entire incentive program is designed to use New Mexicans, New Mexico residents, New Mexico businesses. You don't qualify for our incentive programs unless you use New Mexico resources. And to that degree, we had to focus on making sure those resources were there, whether they were human resources, physical resources, such as infrastructure. So, for example, our first challenge was to grow our crew base. I mentioned when we started we had less than 100 crew. That wouldn't even staff one film, you know, one good-sized film. So we began in earnest a film crew training program in conjunction with the local union, IATSE, which is the film crew union here, to develop curricula that would train New Mexicans to work on films. And again, we ran that through our community college system. We now have six of those programs around the state.
So it's not just the Santa Fe Community College.
No, the Santa Fe Community College was the first one. They were the initial program, had tremendous success there. We're now at Central New Mexico. We're now down at Roswell, Eastern New Mexico, Roswell. We're down at New Mexico State, their Doniana campus. We're up at Northern. We're looking to start a program out in Gallup shortly at the UNM facility out there. So we're really, you know, moving these around to give opportunity to all New Mexicans around the state. In addition to that, we began programs to train businesses in the unique requirements for servicing the film industry. And, for example, working with rental car companies like Enterprise, where they have an entire unit now that's dedicated solely towards servicing film productions that come in.
Is that right? Like, what, do they have special vehicles for transporting cameras and props and stuff like that?
You know, it's not so much that, but they do have special vehicles to the degree that, for example, they have a lot of hybrids that productions want to use now, because Hollywood is very progressive in terms of using green technologies, in terms of minimizing their footprint on the environment. And that's another thing we have. It's a green filmmaking program that not only trains businesses, but trains films, or gives films the resources to use renewable resources in making their films, or to reuse things, or to use things like hybrid vehicles. So, and then I mentioned the physical infrastructure. Then we also have, like the state pen. One of the elements of our incentive program is productions get free use of a lot of state facilities and lands for either basing their productions at, headquartering them at, like the old state pen, Old Main.
Have a lot of movies been shot at the old state penitentiary?
Yeah, the first one of note was a remake of The Longest Yard, which was a Paramount film that came in with Adam Sandler. That was really our first, along with The Missing, a Ron Howard film starring Tommy Lee Jones. Those were really kind of the first two big films that we attracted to the state, and The Longest Yard, based out of Old Main. And then in addition to that, we've got a prop shop out there that's run in conjunction with the union again. And there are a lot of production offices that are based out there.
Do people, do filmmakers say, ooh, an old penitentiary, I think I'll write a screenplay? In other words, is the structure itself a motivation?
Well, it was for The Longest Yard, and they did a lot of renovations to the Old Main, including reconstructing the facades and building some new buildings out there, which, by the way, Paramount then donated to the state. I mean, they didn't demolish it. They left it there for additional productions now to come in and use that. And, you know, if they're not inspired so much by the New Mexico State Penitentiary per se, it's kind of a gothic building. It's a little dark. It's got that vibe to it. So, yeah, there are
ghosts and
ghosts.
Lord knows what's in there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the history of that place is a little macabre, to say the least. But so anyway, yeah. Productions, significant amount of productions use that facility.
We're talking to Eric Witt and Trish Lopez about the New Mexico film program, film incentives. Now, it's a funny combination, as things like this always are, between public programs and then private facilities of various kinds. You're talking about the collaborations with Enterprise and so on. There's also quite a bit of post-production that has become available in New Mexico.
Well, New Mexico's incentive program is structured such that post-production standalone also qualifies for our rebate program. We have also had companies that come in.
What does that mean, post-production standalone?
Well, in other words, if you shoot your film somewhere else, if you do the three stages of film production are pre-production, where you're preparing your sets and building sets and all that stuff and practicing and rehearsing for the film. Then there's principal photography, which is where you're actually shooting the film. It's the actual creation of the film. And then post-production, which is all the editing, effects, the Foley work, which is the sound mixing and all that kind of stuff happens. If you shoot your film outside of New Mexico, but you bring it to New Mexico to do the post-production work, that also qualifies for our 25% rebate segment of our incentive program, which has attracted companies like Sony Imageworks, which has brought about 60 artists, digital artists, effects artists, and post-professionals to Albuquerque. The last film that they worked on of note, which will be coming out in theaters soon, is the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland film, which is a 3D film coming out. Some of the most advanced post-production work in existence today, done right here in New Mexico. And there are other facilities that we have down in Albuquerque. There are some here in Santa Fe that we're doing. We're looking to incorporate more New Mexico resources, like our musicians, to do soundtracks and scoring and things like that in the state, and bringing in all those different creative elements that go into making the film that maybe aren't the ones people think of right away, but are, you know, both integral to making movies and could be very lucrative. Things as simple as doing the posters for movies, you know, that you see the billboards and things like that. That's an extraordinarily lucrative job. Spin-off products that we have, what they call ancillary products, like graphic novels, toy design, all that, all those kind of things that attend to making a movie. all of that we want to have here in New Mexico.
And in fact, Mary Charlotte, just yesterday, a large group of post-production professionals held their first meeting for what will be the New Mexico Post Alliance, modeled off the HPA Hollywood Post Alliance in Los Angeles. They have several board members now in the interim while they're beginning to create this 501c6 nonprofit. And so hopefully we'll see a lot more from them and get a lot more representation of our post people and what they can do in New Mexico.
So when you build a post-production facility, as they've done in Albuquerque, you basically have to build it to Hollywood standards, whatever that means.
Well, you know, analogous to the Chinese buildup of their manufacturing infrastructure, which has taken place largely in the last 10 to 15 years versus, say, a lot of America's manufacturing infrastructure, which was built out in, you know, early part of the last century. Facilities built in New Mexico are by definition mostly state-of-the-art because they're brand new. And a lot of the technologies that go into particularly post-production facilities are heavily dependent on digital technologies, more and more so now. And those are accessible in New Mexico just like anywhere else. In fact, we have some of the most advanced computational capabilities in the world, whether it's the New Mexico Supercomputing Facility, which when it was built at the time was the third fastest computer and supercomputer in the world. It's not there now, but it remains the fastest non-classified supercomputer in the world. The access to that kind of computing facility is a tremendous asset for companies looking to come into New Mexico. And then, of course, there's just the I won't say run-of-the-mill, but there's the smaller scale boutique post-production houses that either work on a specific film or a specific element of the film. They're specialists in recreating water effects or fire effects or things like that.
So you don't have to burn our state down to make a movie.
You don't have to burn our state down to make a movie. And a lot of these technologies are applicable not just to entertainment anymore, but they're what they call cross-platform to a lot of other applications like medical imaging, where we're working with the medical school at the University of New Mexico to do telemedicine and medical imaging, materials research, advanced immersive simulation technology for defense applications, for example, for troops going into densely populated urban areas where IEDs are hitting all over the place, where we can send folks through a digitally immersive simulation training regime rather than having them step out of their Humvee into the real thing, without having that kind of training, or flight simulation, very highly advanced flight simulating technology. So there are a lot of other applications that these same technologies are useful for.
Very interesting. We were talking on this program a while ago about what motivates people to go to the theater as opposed to going to the DVD store, Netflix, or whatever, to watch films, and that's a huge question and a huge change in the film industry, but 3D seems to be one of those things that you still have to go to the theater to see, and that's a growing part of filmmaking.
It is a growing part of filmmaking. More and more theaters are retrofitting their screens to be 3D capable, but what's really driving this current resurgence in 3D, because there's an old saying that 3D is the technology of the future and always will be, because there have been a number of times that people are trying to promote 3D, going back to the 1950s, those famous photographs of people with the cardboard glasses on. What's really driving it this time around is that television makers, the big flat screen makers, Panasonic, Mitsubishi, Sony, they're all coming out with 3D capable, large format flat screen TV, and this technology is tremendous. I happened to have the opportunity to preview this last year in Los Angeles with Jim Cameron, the director of the film, that's the blockbuster film Avatar that's out in the theaters now. And we were discussing both the advent of this technology, but what will make this go around of it different. And a lot of it is accessibility to consumer electronics, that many consumer electronics will now be built with 3D capable, so you don't have to go to the theater, you'll be able to watch 3D at home. And I got to tell you, I watched the demo of this with a sporting event, with a football game that was displayed in 3D on one of these TVs, and
it was scary.
It was amazing. I thought it was going to be okay, whatever. I watched it was highly, highly impressive. And I think ESPN has even contracted with Cameron's company to he developed a brand new camera system to shoot Avatar, and to use that system to broadcast some dozens of sporting events in the coming year in 3D. In fact, one of the networks in England, I don't know if it was B Sky B or the BBC, is broadcasting one of the English Premier League soccer games in 3D in the coming weeks, and they expect a tremendous. They're not telling people which bars they're going to be at around London. You just kind of got to show up at these select secret bars. They'll be showing it in 3D, but they think it's going to be a blowout event.
Wow. Now, I know absolutely nothing about 3D, but I mean, is it, when you build a 3D camera, are there two lenses? Is it shot in a bifocal kind of way? Do you know?
There are various technologies. Some of them are dual lens or multi-lens, even more than two lenses. Some are single lens technologies. It just depends. It just depends.
We're talking to Eric Witt and Trish Lopez about the New Mexico film industry. So what are some of the films that have been made in New Mexico that people might know about?
Out in theaters right now, and just announced for Oscar nominations last night, are Crazy Heart, starring Jeff Bridges, who received a nomination for Best Actor. Transformers, which received a nomination for Sound Mixing. That's the Foley stuff that I was talking about before. Actually, Crazy Heart, I think, had three nominations. Book of Eli is out right now. Legion is out right now. Brothers is in theaters. Then we have three TV series that your listeners may know. Breaking Bad, which won an Emmy for Best Actor for Bruce Cranston, the star of the film. We have In Plain Sight, and then a couple other TV series that are starting to come in. Their pilots will be shot here, coming in soon. Then, probably the best known ones in the last few years have been Oscar winners No Country for Old Men, have been 315 to Yuma and the Valley of Elah, the Transformers 1 Terminator Salvation film that was out. So these are significant films that have been shot in New Mexico and reflect the regard with which the industry holds New Mexico, that they look at us now as a major player in the industry. In fact, Variety magazine recently named New Mexico the third best place in North America, not just in the United States, but in all of North America, to shoot films outside of California and New York. And then Filmmaker magazine just named Albuquerque the number one city in the United States in which to live and make movies, ahead of both Los Angeles and New York. So we're
very interesting.
Yeah,
so that includes Vancouver, which is
includes Vancouver, it includes Toronto, which has been a big center of filmmaking. It includes Chicago, which has had, its dances with filmmaking. San Francisco, this is quite a recognition for the state.
Let's talk about the actual incentives, which we've been alluding to in this conversation. The incentives that actually bring people into New Mexico from outside, or incentives for people who live here as well, who are filmmakers. What is the incentive for somebody to shoot a film in New Mexico?
Well, first, everybody has the same criteria for qualifying for the incentives, whether they're in-state or out-of-state residents. Again, the qualifying criteria to access it being, you have to use New Mexico-based people and businesses, goods and services, to access our incentive program. The primary incentive that virtually all films that shoot here take advantage of is our 25% refundable tax credit or a rebate. The next most popular incentive is that we offer up to $15 million per film or season of series television in interest-free loans in return for a back-end participation for the state in any profits that project makes. Then we also offer training incentives for productions to train our New Mexico crew, both above and below the line. And we call that the JTIP. They're euphemistically known as the JTIP and the FCAP program. Basically, we help to pay the salaries of New Mexican residents that are training up in skill levels on a production. And then last but not least, as we mentioned before, is free use of certain state facilities and lands for location shooting, so the production doesn't have to pay lease fees or permitting fees or rents or other things like that. So those are the four primary areas of our incentive program. And the reason we have those different kinds of incentives is that every film is different. Every film uses a different combination of those kind of incentives. Some films come in with their own financing. They don't need the state to provide that $15 million in interest-free loan. They need the landscapes. They would like to train up our crew members to get into key position, you know, key grip, you know, key whatever. Other states come in, they need the financing, but they don't need so much the free use of the state facilities because they've already got a location that they've secured through other means, and they don't need that kind of assistance. So every film mixes and matches those incentives in a different blend.
What does New Mexico do for its own filmmakers? We have these terms above the line and below the line. What are those? What do those terms actually mean, and what do we do for each group?
Well, there's hundreds of people on any given movie set, especially something like a Terminator movie, which would have hundreds of New Mexicans working this past year. New Mexico Filmmakers Program is part of the New Mexico State Film Office, and for years has been offering a series of training programs, competitions, networking events, outreach events for local filmmakers and those who aspire to be filmmakers. So we have one, for example, would be the New Mexico Filmmakers Showcase. Any New Mexican is eligible to put their film into our annual May Showcase, any length, any genre of film. And it's free. It's free to enter a film, free for your friends and family, anyone in the public to attend. So we'll be having it again this spring. The New Visions Contract Award program is one of our most popular programs. And that is a program where the legislature allocated $160,000 per year, up to $20,000 per filmmaker, to be provided to local filmmakers' projects to see them through completion every year. So we just announced the 2009 winners November 30th, and they're doing their service to the state now. One of the important aspects of that program is because we're a state agency and don't provide grants, they provide a community service to the state because they have a certain expertise in filmmaking. So we have, for example, winners this year who are doing animation workshops at Taos Pueblo, red camera workshops at Northern New Mexico College, documentary film training programs and seminars for high school kids in Las Cruces, stuff like that. So that's New Visions. We have our NALIP filmmaker training programs. That's the National Association of Latino Independent Producers. In fact, on February 10th, we have two main programs that they do here, the Latino Writers Lab and the Latino Producers Academy. You do not have to be of Hispanic descent, and you do not have to be a NALIP member in order to apply to these. They're these really fantastic fellowship programs that train New Mexicans for 7 to 10 days time. It's a residential program.
We had them we had the director on when they were here last time, and there was a filmmaker who made a film that was being shown here under that program. I think it was called Don't Let Me Drown. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
There's some really good work is coming out of that.
Absolutely. And this will be the third year that they're in New Mexico. So on February 10th, the NALIP Writers Lab applications will be available on the Film Office website for the May Writers Lab. And then the Producers Academy will come up in August. And a great way to find out more about all this information is on our website, nmfilm.com. I mean,
That's easy enough, nmfilm.com.
Yeah, wealth of information about our New Mexico Filmmakers programs. People who are interested in maybe being an extra on a film can look at the casting calls on our bulletin board, free screenings.
No experience needed, I assume.
Absolutely not. No experience needed. Yeah, a lot of people have had fun with this. You know, we talk to schools all the time, and they say, oh, my sister was background in Swing Vote in Belen. My brother did background in this. So it's really fun.
But back to... What are those above and below the line? What do they actually mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. Above the line meaning writers, producers, directors, actors.
Okay.
It's a budgetary reference.
Oh, the line is an accounting line.
Right.
Okay.
And below the line, as I spoke about hundreds of filmmakers being on any given movie set, you know, and that can include not even just a set, part of post-production, all kinds of stuff. Everyone else is kind of crew below the line.
So carpenters, electricians,
right?
Camera. What about camera people?
Well,
camera. The principal cinematographer is above the line. It's considered director of photography, DP.
Right. And a director and a DP, right, would be above the line.
Right. And everybody else. So this is the thing when we're training all these people. What is the New Mexico? So we're training people to run cameras and do these other things. I mean, I know people who are drivers and set makers and all kinds of things in this industry. what are we doing? So you're talking about the things that we're doing to cultivate the directors and producers and screenwriters,
right?
So that we're not just doing Hollywood films or films from other places, but actually have our own homegrown.
Absolutely, and we have filmmakers here that very well may become mainstream Hollywood filmmakers. I mean, we have two just in this past month who made it into Sundance. One into the Sundance Screenwriting Lab, which only accepts 12 per year. One who got his short film into Sundance Film Festival this year.
Who's
and
that?
Numerous
Who are these
others.
People?
Black Horse Low, who's from Navajo Nation, got his film Shimasani into Sundance this year, which was really exciting, as well as a number of other festivals, including Tribeca. Sydney Freeland, who just won a New Visions 2009 award for her project, Drunktown's Finest, a feature film, just made it into the Sundance Screenwriters Lab, and that was actually, that took place in January. But yeah, a number of other press. Deb Anderson had a world premiere of her documentary on Planet Green for Discovery Channel. We have an animation winner who took top honors at Rome International Film Fest and Independence Film Fest. We have a Las Cruces resident who took top honors at Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival.
Eric, I would call this burgeoning.
But that, the local film scene is burgeoning. And what we're talking about is something that really has a story that really hasn't been told, but that's fundamental to our long-term success, and that is what the state is doing to encourage our local filmmaking industry here. You know, everybody sees the films come in from Hollywood. Everybody sees, you know, the trucks and the big productions and all that. But, you know, in fact, what we have done more so than any other state in the country is really provide resource to our local filmmakers, whether through it's the program that Trish runs, you know, the New Mexico Filmmakers Program, whether it's through our degree programs. You mentioned the above the line, the talent positions on a film that take longer to train by definition. These are, you know, normally like four-year either degree programs, apprenticeships, or things like that, where we have
directors, producers, and whatnot.
You know, here at the College of Santa Fe, that's their number one program of enrollment. It's their filmmakers program. At the University of New Mexico, it's the number one growth program that they have.
The College of Santa Fe had that intensive, was I think a year-long intensive filmmaking program. I don't know now that they've changed it to a new incarnation, whether they're
that was in addition to their that was in addition to their four-year degree,
exactly.
You know, regular film school, NMSU, the Creative Media Institute down there, where we're just starting to see these people graduate and come out with these degrees. You know, we have over 12,000 students in the state enrolled in some sort of film program, whether it's crew training, above the line, some related issue, which indicates a the tremendous interest of these programs to our citizens, but also the degree to which we're encouraging local filmmakers. You know, our goal is to have New Mexican written, New Mexican directed, New Mexico, you know, acted, New Mexico edited, New Mexico shot, New Mexico distributed films.
Yeah. Well, the distribution, of course, is always the trick. I mean, it's funny when we talk about growing the New Mexico film industry so that New Mexico filmmakers can make it to Hollywood. Well, what kind of a goal is that? Most Hollywood films are dismally awful.
Well, that's, you know, there's no accounting for taste or whatever, as they say. One of the things we're most proud of is the number of New Mexicans working in this industry who could not find a job in New Mexico and had to move to L.A. or had to move to New York, who have now been able to return to the home state, and we get letters and phone calls and emails all the time saying thank you, thank you, thank you, because I love my home. I want to be in New Mexico and I want to make my movies here,
yeah.
And now I can.
Absolutely. Just to Eric's point, I'm from Belen myself. I was born and raised there. I went to Los Angeles for my last year of college and stayed out there working at the studios for almost 7 years. You know, Eric lives in LA as well, and it's just funny because when I came back, I met Eric. I started working for the governor's office before the film office, saw how much they were doing here, and I was like, God, it was so great. It's so great to be able to work back home, and it's so great to be able to talk to kids that are so excited about being able to have this new industry in New Mexico that you didn't have before. You know, it's like we talked about, you know, you're working at any number of studios in LA, really, really difficult to get even an assistant job out there, and that's if you have like a Harvard degree. Over here, we have people with no experience that get to be like a director's assistant or a producer's assistant. It's amazing, amazing experiences for them.
That's a very good point. I mean, in a situation that is so intensely competitive, there's not going to be the same opportunities.
Right. Absolutely.
And that, again, that's why our focus on our incentive programs is on New Mexicans. It's not people that just come in, you know, and take these opportunities. We want to create them for our citizens. We're using our taxpayer dollars, we're using our public resources to promote this industry and grow it and nurture it. It's only right that the benefits of that go to our citizens, go to the citizens of New Mexico.
Well, it is a theme, and let's talk for a moment about the legislature, because there are movements toward, for example, bringing New Mexico money so that it's in community banks, you know, making the state basically keeping our money here, making outsiders who are doing business in New Mexico pay taxes here, and really making New Mexico, especially in economic hard times, more of a self-sufficient state.
There are. The bill that you're talking about regarding keeping New Mexico money in community banks was introduced by Santa Fe Representative Brian Eagle. It would require that the state deposit its operational accounts in banks that are chartered here in the state of New Mexico. Right now, we use big national banks. On average, you know, on any given day, we probably have about $1.5 billion in deposits sitting in these banks, which we use as our operating account. The representative's bill
in those would, too big to fail banks.
I don't want to go there. but they are the large national banks. You know, largely because they have the resources to guarantee those kind of deposits. But if you split that, you know, that amount up into smaller amounts, Representative Eagle contends that they would be well placed in our local community banks. We could then turn around and use them to loan to local businesses and keep the money circulating here in the economy, plus the fees that those banks earn for managing those accounts would be taxed here by the state of New Mexico.
Those are the kinds of things that are completely invisible to the naked eye when you're going about your daily business, but can make a big economic difference or significant economic difference for a state.
Right, I agree.
Yeah, and as the economy has become more challenging, more and more attention is being paid to these background issues that, in fact, have very large and significant fiscal implications for the state.
So there's also, and I think every legislative session, the New Mexico film incentives come under scrutiny because some people think that they are not a good idea. They're the waste of the state's money.
Well, scrutiny is not the issue. The legislature has every right and many would argue obligation to review programs that are being run by the executive. That's part of the legislative oversight function as set forth in the Constitution. So,
attack is a better word?
That's where the problems come in, is when there is either a misunderstanding about how the program works that leads to a movement to eliminate the program. There's a lack of appreciation for how successful the state has been, how hard it is in this business. You know, one of the things we haven't talked about is this is a very, very, very difficult business, and the success that the state has had is all the more remarkable because of that. It's not like any state can just put in an incentive program and bingo, overnight they're going to have the kind of success we've had. New Mexico is a classic 7-year overnight success story. We've been at this a long time. When we started this, there were two other states that had an incentive program. There are now over 40. New Mexico remains the premier example among those states of a well-designed program because we've worked at it so hard. So it's not like any state can just come in and say, okay, we're going to do this and bingo overnight. So anyway, going back to the legislature, you know, it's a visible program. It's highly identified with the administration, which makes it an attractive political target. I don't want to be dismissive of efforts to either eliminate or somewhat curtail these programs, but sometimes you have to ask yourself what's the real motivation behind the introduction of these bills that you have. But in any event,
well, what do you think?
I'm not going to speculate, but they don't seem to always be based on the factual evidence, which is why we are always available at any time to talk not just to legislators but to members of the public as to how our programs work, how the industry works, what are the fundamentals of production finance, why are our incentives designed the way they are, where does the state recapture its money that's paid out, what are the benefits to private industry, what are we doing to promote local filmmakers, why did this administration target this business specifically? It wasn't a random choice. Why did we specifically look at this as an area of strategic economic development? So,
what are some of the reasons that the New Mexico film industry, that the film industry, of all the choices of industries in the planet, was chosen? I mean, is it considered a clean industry?
Yeah, it fits very well with New Mexico's strengths and weaknesses. You know, first of all, we have tremendously varied geography, as I mentioned. The range of sets available in New Mexico is incredible. It is an environmentally clean industry. It doesn't leave a big footprint unless, as you mentioned, you burn down the state by accident or blow something up that you shouldn't have done.
Well, I mean, when you... Lord knows when Hollywood film comes and uses an area to do a Western or whatever they're doing, it does leave a footprint. Do they then clean it up? Are there guidelines for ecological restoration?
Absolutely. We require full remediation of any site, particularly state, you know, sites that they use, have to be fully remediated after they do the production. Another benefit of this industry is it's mobile. We can move it around different parts of the state. We can send it out to little towns like Roy, like Mascaro, like Lordsburg and Deming and Taos and Tehachapi and all over the state, where these productions provide a tremendous benefit. There are few, if any, other industries that inject as much cash across as broad a range of businesses in as short a time as does film. I mentioned the natural resources. It matches our weaknesses. We don't have a lot of water resources in this state, which makes something like heavy manufacturing a difficult proposition for New Mexico. And then, of course, there's our people. And you mentioned earlier on in the interview, the tradition of arts and the creative elements in our culture is very attractive, along with our unique combination of technological resources, our national labs that they use, as we mentioned, increasingly digital technology is becoming part of production. Some of the most advanced computational science in the world is being done at these labs. They are under a mandate to commercialize a lot of what they're doing. Entertainment is a tremendous entree for them into private industry. Our universities that we mentioned. So the combination of creative resources, technological resources, higher institution and training resources makes this a very attractive place for and the other thing is, we're an hour and 45 minutes away from Los Angeles.
By plane,
which is something you can't buy, you know, along with our weather, you know, the 300 days of sunshine a year. So
right. We
did a strength and weakness analysis like you do for any business and came up with a strategic plan for the state and pursued this industry.
Now, this coming Friday is Film and Media Day at the Capitol from 10 to 4.
Right. Very exciting. IATSE Local 480, which is the International Alliance of Theatrical and Stage Employees, which employs thousands of people in New Mexico, is hosting Film and Media Day in a huge tent across from the Capitol on the corner of Paseo del Peralta and Old Santa Fe Trail across from Connie's grocery store. From 10 to 4, they'll have tons of events going on. We'll be showing local filmmakers' films for free. There'll be free T-shirts, food, makeup, stuff like that for the kids. Mini workshops on the hour, every hour, to talk about production, camera operation, hair and makeup design. A mini production going on with it will be called Trial of Billy the Kid, where they'll just take people that happen to be coming into the tent and use them as extras and use them as actors in that short film. Really, really exciting stuff going on Friday. And it would be great to have everyone in the community come out. Kids are welcome, adults are welcome, whether you're a part of the film industry or not.
So this is this Friday, February 5th, from 10 to 4, Film and Media Day at the Capitol. Eric Witt is Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Bill Richardson. Trish Lopez is with the New Mexico Film Office, which is on the web at nmfilm.com. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you, Mary
Thanks,
Charlotte.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm happy now to welcome Summer Pierre. She is the author of the new book, The Artist in the Office, How to Creatively Survive and Thrive 7 Days a Week. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So one of the things I have to say, full disclosure, I never do how-to books on my program.
Oh, I'm so honored.
I exclude them categorically. I tell people if you have a how-to book, don't even apply. But this was such a lovely book, and I thought it would be really worth talking about. You are an artist and a musician and have spent quite a bit of time, as many of us have, in office jobs when in some ways you might have been preferring to do something else. How did you come to write this book? Tell us a little bit of your story.
Well, my story is that, like so many people with arts backgrounds, I came into the world needing money and a steady paycheck. So I've been doing office jobs pretty much my whole career while moonlighting and doing illustration and being a singer-songwriter and a writer. And you know, I've always really loved creativity books and inspiration books, but one of the things that I always felt lacking was a real dialogue about what it's like to do it with a day job. And so I decided to write this book. Basically, it's how I've been living my life, and yeah, to fill that hole of artists who do day jobs.
Well, it's an interesting thing because you are against using the term wage slave, no matter yeah. how poorly paid or otherwise exploitive your job is. How come you don't think about it that way?
Because it's a sort of it's like a victim mentality. It's like saying, oh, you know, I'm kind of shackled to my paycheck, when in fact we all get jobs. You know, we get them. We go and get interviewed, and they offer the job to us, and we accept it. And so I always felt like this sort of victim mentality when I said, you know, I was a wage slave, because it made it sound like I didn't have a choice, when in fact, actually, I did. And I think it just keeps us sort of in this sort of bummer mentality about our life that's unnecessary.
Well, one of the things that I got out of reading this book was that bitching, complaining, gossiping, and other things along those lines really take up a lot of space that could otherwise be used for your creative work.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and what I stress in the book is I am not, you know, above gossip at all, or bitching, or complaining especially. I am a big champion complainer. But the thing that I learned with all of that is that it really drains you. You know, there is a purpose for gossip and all of those things that, you know, it keeps you entertained and gives you sort of like this sense of intimacy with other coworkers. But in fact, it keeps you running in place. It doesn't solve anything, and it actually doesn't make your morale any better. It just keeps you down. So what I say about that is that instead of going there, start thinking about ways in which you do like your job or your situation is working, because you can actually do more stuff creatively or otherwise, make progress when you're coming from that place as opposed to a complaining place.
You also make it really clear that whatever it is you're doing, first of all, you can do your job creatively, and you can also find, you know, little minutes and 5 and 10 minute mm-hmm. spots throughout the day to actually focus on something, even if it's not your singing, let's say, or your guitar
right.
playing, focusing on something that is creative and that is a different way of looking at your life than office drudgery.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that one of the things that that I started to do was just experimenting in my day job of how I could look at it creatively. And it just made me, you know, think of the job place as something a little bit more inspiring than just like this dry cubicle atmosphere. Because sometimes office work, you know, it can't even be your calling, but you get through this sort of drudgery. And when you're doing these little acts of creativity, or you engage other coworkers in creativity, which take maybe 5-10 minutes, it just changes your entire day and actually makes you look forward to going to work in a way, because it's like an object of your creativity.
What are some actual examples of that you've done or experienced?
Well, I've done everything from, you know, when you're on the phone and you're doing these little mindless doodles that you don't even notice. I mean, sometimes you can find these, like, Post-its that have, like, all of these little things. If you start collecting them and putting them in a notebook and actually seeing the mysteries of your mind, I do that. Or I bring even a book of poetry and read a poem at 3 o'clock every day. Or if I have another coworker that is just as bored as I am, one day we said, hey, how about every time we see each other, we just dance for 2 seconds? And so, like, he brought a memo to me, and we did this little two-step, and then we went on our day. And so it's just a way to be invigorating, very small things that don't get in the way of your actual work, because I think that's very important to do your job. But you can do everything but, like, leave little secret notes places, anything that makes it a little bit more inspiring to you.
How did your employers feel about all these things that you did?
Well, it was definitely interesting, because some people absolutely loved it, And other people were just like, who's doing this, you know? I think that it was one of those things where I've always been, you know, when I use the term the artist in the office, it's, you know, I've always been that person. And so, like, they're always just like, oh, Summer, it's you, you know, doing the creativity. But I think that the key was that I learned to balance actually doing work, because I think that employers don't mind it as long as I'm getting the job done and showing up on time and doing my part that I've agreed on. But other than that, people were pretty accepting of it.
I've read in places that nobody actually does more than 4 or 5 hours of work a day anyway,
yeah,
in their 8-hour
yeah
day. So
yeah,
in the rest of the space, you can either be bored and resentful, or you can,
yes,
you can do something useful or productive even just for yourself.
Yes. Absolutely. And I mean, most people spend so much time just on the internet not doing work. It, you know, it kind of gives the appearance of doing work, but in a way it's a sort of junk food way of experiencing the day. And in some, you know, it's their way of trying to find creativity by reading blogs or newspapers or, you know, just skimming the web. And what I like to do instead of doing that, because it's just as draining sometimes and mind numbing as regular work, is just do these little small acts of creativity instead, and in fact, or even set aside 15 minutes to research something, that a project that you're trying to get off the ground creatively.
I have a friend who is a writer and a poet, and she said, she teaches people, and there are some people who get tremendous amounts of writing done, and other people who have a great deal of trouble getting started, and she said something like, writing is like having an illicit love affair. You just sneak it in around the corners and in the margins,
yeah,
of your day, whenever, wherever you possibly can.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think that the beauty of writing is that it really doesn't, I mean, a lot of people think, oh, I need these huge swaths of time, but it's a very simple art form. You just need a pencil and a pad of paper at its most basic. And I can attest to doing all kinds of writing from, literally, I wrote an entire novel at work, and or doing these little like lunch break or even 15-minute thought bubbles. It is a lot like this sort of other person that you go to, and it's also something that you can. It's almost like this little friend you can call up invisibly and check in with. And I loved, when I was working on the novel, I loved having that just as something to go to. It was like this other window that I peered in on. It was a view from my cubicle.
It seems to me, I mean, the thing that I got out of your book and that I thought would really be useful for people is it's just a different attitude and different set of priorities. So I think you said somewhere, I'm not sure exactly how you said, but basically you own your soul and you're renting your time to other people, but always,
yes,
staying at the center of your life and your creative life in that way seems to be really the key to having that creative life and working in an office.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that I try to talk about in the book is that, you know, you are making the choice to have these jobs, and whether or not, you know, you need a roof over your head and all that, I don't want to diminish the need for a paycheck, but that you come from a place of choice and power. And so, yeah, so part of the relationship to having a job is that they are actually renting your time. So what is your time worth to you? And if you have a creative life, I mean, a lot of times we get jobs based on industry or paycheck or anything, and we set our lives up around to support that job instead of having a job support the life we want to live. And I think part of being an artist is saying, basically, putting that first and saying, okay, I want a job that actually supports that. And I think jobs do support creative lives very much.
Summer Pierre is author of the book, The Artist in the Office, How to Creatively Survive and Thrive 7 Days a Week. And it's just a really charming book full of your illustrations and full of ideas. And I just want to thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had such a good time.
Excellent. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.org. Thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And you can write to me at my email address, radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to Brian Highhill for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz.